Have you registered for the Recruitment Coach Live Summit yet? Here's reason number three why this will be the best investment you make in your business in 2025. You'll discover the latest trends. Listen, the recruitment industry is literally changing before our very eyes. What worked 2 years ago or even last year could already be outdated information. If you want to stay current in terms of the technology, the adoption of AI and automation, and the tactics and strategies that are actually working right now in today's marketplace, then you need to get yourself to London on September 17th or 18th. Do not get left behind. Register now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
We see ourselves as a 6-star hotel. The candidates come and sometimes they stay and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they get jobs with other consulting companies. But it is our philosophy to make sure that every candidate wants to come back and stay in the FPS hotel, 6 stars. We really look after the candidates.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and my guest today is Paul Taff. Paul is the founder and CEO of Finance People Solutions in Frankfurt. He's been in the recruitment business since 2014, and prior to that, he was either a CFO or CRO for organizations such as Pepsi, Nike, Lear, Dell, as well as having worked in private equity. Paul is one of my coaching clients, and I asked him to come on the show to discuss how he's been so successful running a boutique firm and how he's been able to double the business on average yearly since 2015. Paul is the sole fee earner with a small support team and last year did over 3 million euros in revenue. He also managed to close 5 deals in April despite the coronavirus. So I'm very keen to find out how he managed to pull that off. Paul, welcome. Thanks for agreeing to do this.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
Happy belated birthday. We both had birthdays recently, about 1 week apart. Do you mind me saying what birthday you just celebrated?
It begins with a 6.
And
it's the
number.
First, Mark, is the first one that begins with a 6.
Fantastic.
So, well, I turned 60 on May 4th. And by the way, congratulations to yourself as well, of course.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's a major milestone. And did that, I know people always ask, like, do you feel different? But the birthdays with a 0 on the end do seem more significant. Was this significant for you in any way?
My first thought was, oh, God, is this happening to me? And I've had some friends who turned 60 a few months ago, and we chatted about it. And my first reaction was, Jesus, I am getting old. But then throughout the course of the day, I felt, Jesus, 60 is young. And of course, there's no change physically from one day to the next, yeah?
Of course.
But then you start thinking, a thought that came to my mind was, God, I'm glad I'm not 70. That must be really old.
Awesome.
So I've managed, Mark, to, through my eternal optimism, to convince myself that I'm still a young fella.
Well, absolutely. 60 is a new 50, I think. So
yeah, that's well put.
But you, you've definitely gained a lot of wisdom over the years, which is what I want to tap into today. So I understand you're Irish, right? But you've lived in Germany a long time. How long have you been in Germany?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Ireland. And then I left Ireland in my early 20s and decided to go on a world tour and ended up coming through Frankfurt, Germany. Then I've lived in quite a few different places in Italy, in Switzerland, in Sweden, Holland, but ended up getting married here in Frankfurt and having two wonderful children who were born here in Frankfurt, and decided to stay in Frankfurt. Frankfurt is now home. I've spent 2/3 of my life here. I love living in Germany. We have a great quality of life. I'm a huge fan of Eintracht Frankfurt, which people who know me here in Germany will confirm. And in the middle of Europe, great cosmopolitan city, small, very small city, 750,000 population, hugely international, hugely tolerant city, and great place to live.
Nice. All right. Fantastic. So, Paul, could you just start out telling us a little bit about who is FPS?
Yes, I could. I certainly. Yeah, I mean, I thought when I was thinking about the name after I decided to set up my own company, and the reason I did that, Mark, was because I was fed up of living out of hotel rooms and suitcases. I wanted to come back to Frankfurt, and I come from a family of entrepreneurs. My dad, my brother, my sister all had their own companies. And so the name obviously suggests the meeting finance. We focus on the finance function, CFOs down 2 levels below. That's what we cover. So we only do finance and people. It's all about people, and that's the fun part. And then the last part, which I think is very appropriate, is solutions. I mean, we apply different solutions to different situations. We do permanent, obviously. We do interim. We do interim to permanent, which I think we were the first to market that here in Germany, and it's been very popular and very successful. You know, in these turbulent days, having an open CFO slot or an open head of controlling or accounting or tax slot can be very expensive. So our mission is to make sure no customer has an open slot for very long, and we place our interim people, you know, literally within a matter of days.
Wow, cool. So it seems to me that finance, and particular senior finance roles, that's a very competitive market. How have you been able to thrive in that market against, much bigger competitors, Paul?
It is indeed a very competitive marketplace, and we actually do not go head on into competition with what I would call, you know, the really big players. I try and avoid that, and thus how we managed to be successful. I think the recipe for success is building relationships. And I have built through my own career lots of relationships that are long lasting, that I invest time in maintaining. And I do the same in the business world. I build relationships, I develop relationships, and my closest relationships are with my candidates. I mean, our philosophy at FPS, we're a small team, there are 5 of us. Is we see ourselves as a 6-star hotel, and the candidates come, and sometimes they stay with our customers, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they get jobs with other consulting companies. But it is our philosophy to make sure that every candidate wants to come back and stay in the FPS hotel, 6 stars. We really look after the candidates. We make sure we keep them fully up to speed on how recruitment process is going. I think we do that better than most of our competitors, and our candidates appreciate that. So that's how we've managed to be successful, is growing successful relationships with top candidates. I mean, clearly we're fussy about the quality of the candidates we have, and that's something that is, you know, is key for our customers. When they get CVs from us, they always comment on the quality of the people we send, and I interview everybody personally. I think that's an important piece of our success story. You could ask yourself how scalable is that, and then you ask yourself how many hours are in the day. But if you're having fun, then you know it doesn't seem to take a lot of time, and I really do enjoy the people bit.
Awesome. So, Paul, I would like to delve a bit deeper into that because I think most recruiters want strong relationships with clients and candidates, and most recruiters try to develop those strong relationships. But I guess the question is, how have you done it? Like, what you've obviously really nailed that part of this business. Could you give a little more detail around how you've accomplished that?
Yeah, sure, Mark. Well, I think it's down to personality at the end of the day. I mean, I'm a very open there's a great German word called uncomplicated, unkompliziert person. And I can build chemistry with people very quickly. And I love working with people. And, you know, because I've had a pretty successful career myself with, you know, very high standard companies like Nike or Dell or Pepsi Cola or Lear Corporation, you know, I know what it takes to be a really good CFO in a demanding world, also in the private equity portfolio jobs that I had. So I can relate to candidates very, very quickly. And I think that's the USP. The candidates know when they talk to me, he's a CFO. And he was a successful CFO, and they often comment that that makes a huge difference versus talking to other recruiters who don't know anything as close to me about a particular how a CFO performs their job and what's important and that kind of thing. So they, you know, having been a CFO and also being a very open, uncomplicated person, I love that German word. Is how I build chemistry, and it is my objective to give candidates advice, and not necessarily for the position that I'm talking about. If they don't fit, then they don't fit. But I do a lot. I spend a lot of time when I talk to candidates, going through their CVs and giving my advice as to what I think would be a good route to go career wise, and they appreciate that, and that's why they come back and always want to have a chat.
Okay, so if I can try and parse this. So number one, obviously you come from a CFO background yourself. You've been very successful in that role. So you have a lot in common with your candidates. You can relate to them on a deeper level. You really understand them and they know that. So that's one factor. Number two is personality. What's that German word for uncomplicated?
Unkompliziert.
Okay, brilliant. So that you've got your personality going for you, you really enjoy this aspect of the business and the relationship side. And so, you know, if you enjoy that, then that's going to, you know, naturally lead to a great rapport with people. Number three is you take time to give advice, help people with their CV. And even if it doesn't immediately or directly benefit you, I guess is what you were alluding to there. I think you and I have spoken before about you regard yourself almost as a coach. You do quite a lot of coaching for your candidates. Could you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, I certainly can. And it is very true, Mark. You always end up when you're having a conversation with, let's say, a CFO talking about his career. And I mean, that is always their first priority, apart from, you know, family and all that good stuff, is where they are on their career. I mean, the CFOs that we deal with are usually, you know, the top-notch people, ambitious, structured, successful. And so we automatically end up talking about the career and how I view a next step. And I'm also very open. If I don't think they fit into a particular slot that we have, then I will tell them that. And if I feel they fit into a slot and they're a little bit reluctant at the beginning, then I'll try and convince them, or I'll at least explain as to why I think it could make a lot of sense. And it's that openness and genuine interest on my part that forges these relationships. And, you know, when CFOs who don't get a position via us, I mean, as you know, there's an awful lot of players in a country with over 80 million people. But if they've enjoyed my coaching or my support and they move into a CFO job, then the first person they call if they need a head of controlling or accounting or tax, I would like to think is me. In a lot of cases, it is.
So that's interesting. Do you find that because you're the one who has taken the time and given the best advice to the candidate, that even if they ultimately get a job through one of your competitors, you end up winning them as a client once they're in their new position?
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly the objective. Now, I mean, those guys also have their own network of headhunters. And I mean, it's not untypical, and my colleagues will know this. If a headhunter places you, then there's a bit of loyalty expected when it comes to hiring your team. So you know that's often the case. But nevertheless, I do get a lot of my main customers are CFOs, and Mark, I have become friends with so many of these candidates. I mean, they're not just candidates. That sounds very cold. You know, they're friends or business friends of mine. Yeah,
Paul, I'm interested in this. Like, how have you taken those relations? Because, I mean, that is quite a different thing to have a professional relationship with a candidate and to deliver an excellent service. But you've kind of taken it to the next step, which is to have a kind of professional, you know, friendship with them. How have you achieved that? Like, can you give us some concrete steps?
Yeah, I mean, if I enjoy a conversation with let's say a CFO, the first conversation I have, and as I said, I'm a huge football fan. So let's say we touch base on football, and this person also, I mean, as most Germans, they have their own clubs. And I mean, I quite often invite them then, if they're playing in Frankfurt, to come around to what we have is a Stammtisch, which is a big German tradition where you have the same people meeting every couple of weeks before we go to our home game here, or before we watch, for example, Ireland playing rugby in one of the Irish pubs in Frankfurt. And I'd invite those people along. I mean, I'm a bit of a people animal. I just love meeting people, and I always try and keep up relationships going with people. Whether it's, you know, inviting them to my birthday parties, which I like to have, or my second marriage wedding party last year here in Frankfurt, we had 170 people attend, and a lot of those people were friends that I'd made over my career, and who'd worked for me or with me, or who I'd met in my Finance People Solution days. Yeah, I just think it's kind of fits together. If you enjoy working with somebody and spending time with somebody, then you develop a relationship, and that quite often goes beyond the normal business relationship to become a friend. I mean, particularly when it comes to a career advice, and you talk about, you know, should you take your family with you? And I always advise them not to do so. So, you know, I give them very open advice, which I think probably they're not used to when they talk to quite a lot of the other recruiters. And of course, there are other excellent recruiters in the marketplace, very successful. But I don't think it's the general rule to be as open as I am with candidates, and to show such keen interest to help those candidates along in their careers.
So this is excellent, Paul. What I'm learning is, I mean, it's the idea of corporate hospitality isn't new. I mean, that's been around for decades, right? But your approach to it is very, very personal. So whereas some companies might do hospitality and it's purely a kind of business thing, they're only doing it really to try and schmooze the client. But you're doing the things that actually are you're interested in. So, you know, Irish rugby, you know, German football, your birthday, wedding, you know, these are very personal and things that you're passionate about, and you're involving your clients and candidates, you know, in those experiences. So it is a much deeper level of hospitality.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, clearly that's a minority as well. I mean, I don't have the capacity to maintain friendships with so many people, but you said it quite correctly, Mark. I enjoy it. And why should you not continue to do something you enjoy? And if it's a good business relationship, and I don't have a problem maintaining professionalism, even if I'm friends with somebody, I still give them, you know, my opinion and be very firm on particular points. I mean, I'm a huge fan of fairness on both sides, from customers and from us and from candidates. And I do have a problem if fairness you know, is breached, and that's a reason for me not to do business with a particular customer if I find them being unfair. And that's a bit of a bit of a stomach emotion, as we all know, but I absolutely have very little tolerance for not being dealt with fairly.
Mm, excellent. I agree 100% with that. Now, the kind of hospitality you're talking about obviously isn't possible currently. What's been your corona experience, and how have you adapted to that?
Yeah, corona has been kind of mind-blowing, I think, for everybody, because in our generation, we've never witnessed it. So it makes you, I find, it made me very pensive and doing a lot of thinking, and you spend a lot more time with a smaller group of people or indeed on your own. I've actually quite enjoyed it to a certain extent. My wife's a wonderful cook, so we don't go to restaurants anymore. And previously, I was a bit of a restaurant junkie, and I don't think I will become that again. I clearly miss meeting your mates and going to football. We miss the football a lot, and going to the pubs, because being Irish, you know, you have that pub culture in your DNA, so that's gone, at least for the time being. But in terms of, you know, business wise, as you rightly said at the beginning, we made 5 placements in April. All of those placements were digital. There was one exception where one of my CFO customers actually met the guy then in Munich, but that was just to hand over the signed contract. They'd already made the decision on video meetings. Right. And we're very digital anyway. It's not pragmatic to be, you know, driving around the country, meeting candidates at airports and all that good stuff that used to happen in the old days when I was looking for CFO jobs. And it's just not pragmatic. And a video interview or even a telephone interview is, in my opinion, very, very beneficial to getting to know somebody. And also, actually, it's now encouraged me, or forced me, one could also say, to rethink how we're doing our business. And I was up to 4 this morning working with one of my students, a very capable young lady, to redefine our business approach. And we're getting ready to launch that in May. So that's very exciting. And very, it's a lot more digital than it used to be. So it's combining quality of candidates and speed of availability. That's what it's all about. And that's the gap we want to bridge at Finance People Solutions. And I feel very, very confident that we're going to be pretty successful with that.
Wow, amazing. So there's 3 things that branch off from this that I want to discuss. One is these 5 placements in April and how you managed to keep those moving forward, because a lot of recruiters are finding that things are going on hold or are being put on pause or even just being canceled altogether. So that's one key thing. Second is this new approach that's, you know, more digital and what that involves. And I know you've done a lot of great content marketing, so I want to talk about that. But one thing I have to ask before we get into all that, how is it that you have one of your employees willing to work until 4 in the morning?
Well, her name is Neve. She lives just outside of Frankfurt. Neve is a student, and so she just out of habit goes to bed very, very late, right? And gets up late. So, Neve will, when we talk, it's probably going to be noontime today. Yeah. It's for her, it's natural. And for me, my sleeping pattern has changed dramatically. So I feel very creative, in the evening and night. And it's typical for me not to go to bed till 3 in the morning in these corona days. I mean, I'm relaxing. I have a glass of wine and all that. So it's totally relaxing, but I really enjoy it. And, you know, the creative juices seem to be flowing, because in our industry, I think there's a huge amount of potential to redefine the way things are done and give customers a better proposition than they have been getting over many, many years from the classical recruitment people.
Okay. So is that normal outside of Corona times to have, you know, your team working flexibly and they, as long as they get the work done and they get the objective accomplished, then, you know, they can be flexible in the hours they keep, or?
Well, it depends. Neve is a student and she's a very creative person. So we were designing PowerPoint slides and LinkedIn links and all that good stuff yesterday. That's not typical in the Corona period or in the Corona period, perhaps more so. But no, in general, my team, they have their regular hours. So we all know where each other is and how we can reach them. My team starts usually at 8 in the morning or 8:30. And I always have in my calendar when somebody is working and when they're not. And that always needs to be in my calendar because I need to know where the folks are.
Right.
But that
okay.
works very well. I mean, I have a very decentralized team. I've got Christiane in Hamburg, Christiane in Frankfurt, Susanna in Kassel, Neve in Darmstadt, and my son who helps out as well, Justin, is in Barcelona.
Cool.
We talked also at 2 o'clock this morning.
All right. Awesome. So just while we're on the topic, what is the structure of your team, Paul? Because I see you as kind of the rainmaker. You are the one who is really doing the deals, architecting, you know, the placement process, winning the customers, interviewing the candidates. But you have five people, you said. What are their roles and how do they support you?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be able to do this on my own. And it's sometimes, last year, we actually did over 4 million revenue last year, Mark.
Wow.
I was at the limit. But our organization is getting more and more efficient every day. Last year was the first real test. So I'm a big fan of getting the efficient process. And I think we can leverage the organization a lot more. Let's start off with Susanna. She does search. Mm-hmm. So she's all over the networks for the candidates. She's got a great eye for CVs for people that we don't know. She's fantastic at that. And you know, Susanna was responsible for finding all the candidates for the placements in April. Then I have another lady in Hamburg, Christiane. Christiane does... She's responsible for maintaining our recruitment database, so all of our CVs and candidates, etc. And Christiane also does acquisition, so she's a pipeline filler as well. We work very closely on that. And then I've got Christiane in Frankfurt who does back office. She does the accounting. She does the transaction recording, the contracts we do together. Christiane works more or less half time. She's got another job as well. And then we've got Neve in Darmstadt who does she does research work for Christiane. So looking at companies that have open positions and putting that in easy to use formats for Christiane or for myself, and helps me very much with my LinkedIn communication. And Justin does more or less the same with the LinkedIn. He's studying for his master's. So when he has time, he helps me on LinkedIn or other projects. And I always get his opinion on strategy because he's a very bright guy and very good on strategy. So
he's a chip off the old block.
Yeah, perhaps.
So
I really enjoy working with him.
So Justin and Neve, are they interns or, you know, or are they sort of fully fledged employees?
Well, no, they're part-timers, but they're on the payroll.
Okay. So, you know,
Students on the payroll.
Got it. Wow, that sounds awesome. You've got it really well structured so that you everyone has a different role and they're all feeding, you know, into you. You, when you say acquisition and pipeline building, are you talking about the client side?
Yes.
Okay. So they're looking for job openings, you know, potential clients, and doing research on the clients, and then feeding those leads to you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, new business, new customers. We're always rethinking how we do that. It's not easy. It's like the UK. It's a very competitive market. We have special relationships with the CFOs, and less so with HR people. We have those as well, but the HR people get bothered, quote unquote, by 25,000 recruiters every day, and they're just not open to your classical approach, and that's understandable. Right. So you've got to find smart ways of winning the HR people over to your way of recruiting and convincing them to test you and give you a chance to prove how good you are.
Since you're listening to this podcast, it tells me that you're someone who's interested in personal growth and business improvement. That's something we have in common. I really enjoy listening to podcasts, reading and listening to business books, watching TED Talks. But by far the most important investment I've made in my own development has been working with a coach. It started back in 1999, 2000, when I was working as a recruiter. I hired a coach and he helped me to double my billings in 90 days. It sounds corny, but it was really a life-changing experience. Since then, I've worked with various coaches almost continuously over the years, and it's made a massive difference to my own personal and business success. In fact, that first experience of working with a coach was the catalyst for me ultimately deciding that much as I loved recruitment, my true purpose was to become a coach and enable others to achieve their full potential. Fast forward to today, and I work with recruitment business owners to help them escape the feast and famine roller coaster and create consistent, predictable billings. If you'd like to know more, you can apply for a free strategy session at recruitmentcoach.com/breakthrough. What for you has been a successful route to acquiring new customers?
It's predominantly network. Cold acquisition, I think, does not work anymore, or it certainly is the exception. I mean, one big part of the equation, Mark, as you know, is our partner, Finance Magazine, and we have a great teamwork with Mark and Michael and Ole and Dominic and the team there, a super relationship, and they're a very renowned, the most renowned CFO magazine in German-speaking Europe, is getting more and more successful. They're doing really well now in the corona time with digital journalism, superb stuff. And so we're partners, so we have our advertising in their magazine. I do TV interviews with my friend Michael. We love working together. And that is very good for our branding because, we're the only recruitment company that has that kind of a partnership with Finance Magazine. And Finance Magazine is a subsidiary of the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, which is the most well-known newspaper in all of Germany.
Paul, this is genius. How did you set this up so that you actually are a partner in Finance People magazine?
Now, that's an interesting story. I mean, I always wanted to have not just be another guy on the block because I felt in the marketplace that was going to be very difficult. And I was on a train coming from Hanover back to Frankfurt, and I was on a conference call with 100 hedge fund managers who had lent money to Tele Columbus, which is a very famous restructuring case that I actually managed with my teammates from Alvarez & Marsal back in 2009. And I was in the restaurant part of the train, and the guy sitting opposite me said, "Were you just talking to hedge funds?" And I said, "Yes." And he's the chief editor at Finance magazine. He's now moved on and set up his own company, and we work closely with them these days as well. But from that point, we developed, also we've become friends. He was at my wedding with his wife over the last years. We love working together and brainstorming together. And I proposed the idea to him of having a partnership, and he loved the idea. And, you know, the more revenue we have, the more fun they have with us. And it's a really symbiotic relationship that that I enjoy a lot. I mean, you know, having worked with great companies like Nike and Pepsi, you're surrounded by great people. And when you go out and set up your own little company, you miss that. But I have the pleasure of working with very creative people like Michael and Marcus and Ola and Dominic in the you know, the senior guys at the journal, at the Finance Journal. And you know, you have an awful lot of satisfaction from working with people like that.
So we'll put a link, by the way, to the Finance magazine in the show notes, Paul. Who is the main person over there that is your kind of you know, main point of contact?
Well, I go back a long way with the now co-general manager, whose name is Dominic. Great guy who's made a huge career at the organization. He's now head of sales and a general manager, or a Geschäftsführer, as we say in Germany. So a big job. And Dominic was the guy who I actually started off advertising with when I had my previous company, which I still have for private equity benchmarking, Taft & Partners. So Dominic now, he's gone up in the ranks. So I deal now on a daily basis with Ole, who's now the guy in charge below him, and his direct reports, Michael, Marcus. They're the guys I deal with most of the time. I mean, Michael helps me with my blogs. By the way, I sent Michael a blog at about 3 o'clock this morning. so you know, productive nights, but yeah, they're the key people that I work with.
It's a really smart move on your part, because I can see you've got advertising, you've got exposure through doing like TV. They do a lot of media, so TV interviews. They host events, and then you get to speak or moderate a panel at these events. So you meet a lot of CFOs and senior finance people there. So I understand how you benefit from this partnership, but what do you give them in return, or how do you contribute in a way that makes them want to partner with you?
Well, they do it because they love me, Mark. No, we have. I don't want to give too much details on it, but
sure.
We have a relationship, which means the more profit we make, the better their P&L looks.
Okay, all right. So it's a financial partnership. It's not just a joint like a
yeah, absolutely.
It's a real okay. No, I see.
There's an invoice at the end of every year, and. You know, that and that's fine. I mean, that's the way the relationship works.
Yeah.
And I think they're, you know, a big help for us.
Brilliant. I love that. Now, you also mentioned something else, which is your benchmarking service for
private equity
firms. Is that a business generator for you, or is that?
Well, I don't have time to do that anymore.
Okay.
That was actually quite tough, because you know, you're competing there with the big strategic consulting guys like McKinsey and BCG and Bain and all those guys. So that's difficult. But you know, it was great for me, because I put some tools in place, benchmarking tools, and did a lot of work for one particular private equity fund a few years ago with one of my other business partners, Christoph. And you have a hugely granular knowledge of a finance organization and how it works and how it fits together and how it should develop now in the era of digitalization. And I really try and keep in touch with the trends and the tools that are going on to make sure I am an on the edge a CFO, a guy and CFO recruiter. That's another must in our business proposition.
And did it, so it sounds like the amount of work involved, it wasn't sustainable, but did it allow you to build relationships with hedge funds that were profitable or?
Yeah, well, we don't.
Oh, sorry, not hedge funds, PE firms.
Yes, for sure. One in particular. I mean, that is not scalable, Mark. You know, I mean, when you do a benchmarking project, you're on the ground, you know, for 3 or 4 weeks, and you can't do anything else because there's deadlines. So what it is when a private equity company acquires or a fund acquires a new portfolio company, they would send me in to look at the finance organization and to benchmark it versus, you know, the best practices PE finance organization. So it's a full-time, intensive job, but obviously very, very close to recruiting because you establish in that benchmarking process, you know, the caliber of the people in the portfolio company that has just been acquired. And, you know, you have to make the call if these are developable people or if they're potentially people in the wrong slot for the private equity world. And that's quite often the case. So that's off-selling then on the recruitment side.
It's interesting, Paul, because what's cool about this is you have a very creative mind and, you know, and so even if these ideas ultimately you don't continue with them, I think, you know, it's still a fantastic idea and some of them are going to take hold and like the Finance Magazine and others may not have the same longevity, but that's really cool.
Yeah, my business partner there who's more or less doing consulting full time, he does that now full time.
Okay.
Benchmarks finance organizations and is very successful doing that.
Great. Interesting. So circling back to these five placements in April, I'm still desperate to find out how you pulled that off. Like, were you lucky that those particular clients, you know, decided that they were critical hires, they had to go forward or like, how did you engineer that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the placements were initiated in the pre-corona days, but when I think about it, there was never any thought of stopping them in the corona period because they were in industries that are high growth industries. I mean, digital payments was one of them. There's another family company in the pharmaceutical business. So, you know, clearly we were lucky, two businesses that highly benefited from the corona crisis. Yeah. And it, you know, it was then convincing the candidates to move ship in the corona period.
Right.
I mean, I've had so many candidates say to me, Paul, I don't want to be in a probation period during the virus crisis. And that's, you know, of course, very understandable. But back to the relationship again, you know, I have the relationship with these candidates and they trust me. And actually, there was nobody there with cold feet. It just worked out well. And we closed five jobs.
Brilliant. So you raised a good point, which is a lot of my clients are saying that even if the client is willing, the candidates are, you know, reluctant to, even if they're not happy in their job, they're thinking better the devil you know kind of thing. And, you know, feeling because of the uncertainty around everything, they're hesitant to jump ship. How did you kind of reassure those candidates that this was still a good move that was in their interest longer term?
Yeah, I mean, clearly there were candidates who were ready to move.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't the one who convinced them to move. I convinced them to move to my customers, yes, but they wanted to move in the first place. But, you know, it works the other way as well, Mark. I had an interview yesterday lined up for 1 o'clock with a candidate, and he sent me a text. He said, Paul, I've thought about it over the weekend. It's not the right time. I don't want to proceed. So that happens as well, right? And you've got to
respect them all.
You've got to respect that, yeah. So, but there were people who wanted to move. I I'm very close to the candidates in the process. So we have, you know, a lot of contact points throughout that process. It's not just a call and an interview and then, you know, you then pass them on to the customer. It's much more than that. It's a continual process. We don't just send CVs to customers. We do profiling on the candidates where we ask them to describe themselves and their most important attributes and why they're a particular fit for a particular job and what's their claim to fame from the past and you know, what salary expectations they have and are they mobile. So that's all on a one pager. So customers have the holistic picture of the candidate when they start an interview, and they don't use the interview to find out those things. They know those things before they start the interview, and they can use the interview to get to know the person a lot better. So I think it's a very sensible way of doing it. And I don't think other companies do that either.
That makes sense. So you were very close to the candidates. So there, I guess there was less chance you were going to be taken by surprise, even if any of them had got cold feet. So that's a huge plus.
Yeah, that does happen now and then. I have to say, I mean, we are far from perfect, but it's more certainly more the exception than the rule, and that's a big advantage for our customers. Is our relationship with the candidates, because the likelihood of them, you know, discontinuing a process without me knowing about it on time is pretty low.
Great. Paul, can we speak about your business model? Because you have this really exciting interim to perm proposition, which I think is one of the secrets to your success. Can you speak on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here in Germany, you have very long contractual notice periods. The more senior you are, the longer they are. So let's say a CFO and board member would quite often have a year notice period, or even the quoted companies, you know, they have contracts 3 years or 5 years, like in the DAX area, which is the DAX is the FTSE equivalent here in Germany. So you've got long notice periods, right? Now, let's say customers are not happy and then they don't want to keep their CFO on board, and that happens an awful lot, Mark. The number of CFO placements that have failed in the marketplace over here over the last couple of years has increased dramatically. And that was a topic of the last TV interview I did with Michael back in January of this year. So we quote unquote invented this model, and we from the outset I said we've got to do interim, we've got to do perm, we've got to be a solutions company. So we're very much, there's a lot of companies over here that either do either or, you know, the Aegon Seniors, they do permanent, Russell Reynolds, Spencer Stewart, etc., they do not do interim. And then you have other companies, the bigger players over here in Germany, the market dominators, they just do interim. We do both deliberately. And the border between those two, between interim and perm, is becoming more and more gray. And for example, in the private equity world, when they just hire, you know, sign up a new portfolio company, they don't have time to wait 6 months for a CFO. Yeah, the guy who's in there is probably not up to expectations. That happens quite a lot. So they want to act and get a new person on board very damn quickly. And that's where they come to us. And we will, just looking at our network of CFOs this morning with Christiane in Hamburg, we've got some excellent CFOs that we know really, really well. And so, you know, I get a call from my private equity customer and send them over 3 proposals. Yeah, and I know that these candidates can do the job because I know them so well. So I don't have to. You know, if you look at things like fit and have they got experience in that industry before, blah blah blah. But in general, they're candidates that I would have no hesitation in presenting. And so the private equity guys look at them, and I always have in the back of my mind, okay, would they start interim and then move to perm? Because, you know, CFOs love working for private equity funds. It's the best space to be in from a point of view of making things happen, value creation, And you know, if you're lucky, also very lucrative. Yeah. So the combination of really having to deliver value creation and earn a pile of money, perhaps, you know, is very tempting. So every CFO wants to get into the PE space, but a lot of the CFOs are not made for PE.
So if I understand correctly, Paul, that your solution that you've developed de-risks the hiring process for the customer because they might be reluctant to hire someone if they're going to be stuck with them then for like a year or 3 years or something and they can't get rid of them. So they get to try before they buy, and it also speeds up the whole thing.
You're a very good listener, Mark. Exactly that. And there's one other element of it as well, Mark, which is job profiles change. So when a PE fund buys a company, let's say a Mittelstand, so a mid-sized company here in Germany, who've been run by a corporation or a small corporation or a family, they're not used to the private equity DNA and getting your arms around the numbers and granular and all that good stuff. So they have to take out the CFO. Right. And that happens in 70 to 80% of the cases. And they can't wait, 6 months to find somebody else. So they need somebody. But, you know, at the initial phase, it's heavy lifting. Right. So the organization's broken. You need new people, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got to be, really a change agent. You've got to be operationally very close. You've got to know where the problems are in an organization. So you've got to be able to take your helicopter down, as I call it, and understand the problem and then back up and then get people in. I always say if you have the right people, you can't prevent success. And then later, it might evolve to a position where you need somebody more strategic than operational. Yeah, and that's a different type of person again. So it's a phased approach, and it works really well because the CFOs love it, the private equity customers love it. They have a solution right away, and there's so many examples of private equity funds over here where they just couldn't get management right in the portfolio company, and that you just don't want to have because it costs so much money. And credibility, when you hire a CFO and it goes wrong and the organization's kind of saying, oh God, these private equity guys really do not know what they're doing. And private equity was very much stigmatized here in Germany by the politicians many, many years ago. They were compared to Heuschrecken, which is a grasshopper insect. Yeah, that was all over the press that they just... destroyed jobs and destroyed companies and just pulled money out. A very, very biased and unbalanced view of private equity. So that was a real barrier for the private equity funds. And now, bringing in people, there's a lot more people out there with experience in private equity. There's quite a few seasoned private equity professional CFOs, and we know them all. I mean, I don't think there's one that I don't know, and I go out of my way to know. And I'm always learning to meeting new candidates. Yesterday, a new candidate treasury guy. I knew of him, but I'd never met him personally. And I met him yesterday on a video phone call.
Fantastic.
Always looking for new candidates, always.
So, Paul, like, what would be the sort of mix in your business between like revenue from interim versus revenue from permanent?
Well, I can tell you over the last few years, we're doing more and more interim business. Mm-hmm. Because it's the instant solution kind of thing, and I get more of a kick out of that from my own experience of being a CRO at a very demanding project, working very closely with Tony Alvarez and the Alvarez Marzal team. So you get used to delivering quality results in a very short period of time. It's the combination that is the kick for me, and that's why I like the interim side of things. And interim, to be fair, is a much easier business than perm, because the culture fit with interim plays much less of a role than it does on the perm side, because the interim managers are usually people you can put them on the ground anywhere and they'll work out. You know, they're sociable people used to meeting different organizations and are happy to be out of the political situations that you typically have when you hire permanent people. That's one of the main reasons people do go interim, because they just hate politics.
Interesting. I didn't think of it that way.
It's true. If you talk to the interim managers, I know it from my own experience. When I worked for Advent, I issued an invoice every month, right? And it's a nice feeling. You feel very independent when you're issuing an invoice, and you know you could, if you wanted to, walk away the next day and find something else, right? So that's a different DNA, the interim people, than the perm people.
So you find it is actually easier, you enjoy it more, it's more fast-paced. How does it compare? Is it more lucrative? Like if you consider the fee for an interim project versus the equivalent level of person on a permanent basis, then is the interim more profitable?
Well, actually, it depends on the amount of time that it takes to fill a permanent role. If you can fill a permanent role quickly, and we're getting more and more into that situation, as I said at the beginning, where our network is there, and I'm just working on the model, which is called We Don't Search, We Have, right?
Okay, yeah.
And so then that's more lucrative. Right. But it's also higher risk because, it's like moving a football team, or it's almost like getting married. You know, you've got to really fit with your new partner, with your new company and the soft skills. And as I said in my interview with Michael, interviewing somebody in an interview room before they join the company is a much different atmosphere than when they join. When they come in, the pressure is high. Their boss might be under pressure, behaves differently than in an interview room. It's a completely different world.
Right.
And it's very difficult to anticipate if it's going to work or not. And thus, so many failures in CFO recruitment in Germany in 2018 and 2019 is unbelievable. Unbelievably high. And that's why I think our model of interim to perm is a great de-risker.
I love it. Paul, we're out of time for today, but that has just flown by. We've been chatting for an hour already. So I really appreciate your time and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. You gathered over 60 years of life and many years in business. I sincerely appreciate it.
And Mark, I would like to thank you for being a fantastic coach and inspirer for me since we first met back in 2015 or 16 or whatever it was. But thanks from me as well. Very, very inspirational working together with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Paul. That means a lot to me. I appreciate it. Paul Taff, I'll speak to you again soon.
Take care, Mark. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. If you've enjoyed the show, the best way you can show your support is to click that subscribe button. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.